And now on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about secret societies, the Illuminati. Who are they? Robert Howells joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm looking forward to this next couple hours. Robert Howells has spent the last 20 years investigating the mysteries of Rennes-le-Château, the Priory of Sion, and the history of conspiracy theories. Now, during this time, he has built up an extensive knowledge and experience of secret societies, symbolism, esoteric thought as well. Several of his books, The Last Pope, Inside the Priory of Sion, and The Illuminati. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Robert, what a time to be involved with the Illuminati and investigating all of this. Welcome to the show.
Hello, George. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Looking forward to this. This is an interesting subject matter that not a lot of people investigate. How did you get started into it?
I have a kind of very alternative view on life and history. And it came from childhood. It came from an interest in mythology, but also in personal experience. I used to have out-of-body experiences as a child.
Ah, okay.
And that gives you a very different perspective, because if you leave your body, I didn't know what they were at the time, I was just a kid, but if I ever got flu, I'd be able to see myself from across the room. It was like my consciousness would come out. And then when you do that, you don't have any needs, you don't have any physicality. So when you then hear about ideas about hell and religion, none of that makes any sense, because you think, well, when you die, your body's gone. You know, there's no reward in the afterlife. There's no torture in the afterlife. You've got this life now. So I kind of started to question religion. And I remember being in school and teachers talking about Noah's Ark and thinking, you know, Noah's Ark, the dimensions are given. It's about 70 foot long. You can't fit 2.5 billion species in a box that's 70 foot long. So I really began to look at religion differently and wonder whether there was anything behind it and whether there was, you know, what was the truth behind it all. And that kind of led me to secret societies, because I started to read a lot and discover that secret societies may have had real secrets that had to be protected through history. So I ended up in a bookshop called Watkins Books, which is a large mind-body-spirit occult bookshop in London. It's one of the oldest in the world. It's over 100 years old now. And it was there that I read all the religions, Bhagavad Gita, Zen, the Vesta, the Quran, Zoroastrianism, Christianity, Gnosticism, Zen. But I also encountered a lot of people from different secret societies. So I got to know people in Freemasonry and Templars, Sufis, the Gnostics, and also a member of the Priory of Sion, the secret societies mentioned in Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code. This was back in the early 1990s. So
what was the motivation, Robert? What was the motivation of these secret societies? What was their mission?
To protect secrets throughout history. So as Christianity became a state religion in Europe and became more controlling, it became the religion of the Roman Empire, and it became more controlling and more oppressive. Any alternative views began to get suppressed. So you see the persecution of the Cathars, where the Cathars were Christians, but they had a different view of Christianity. And that didn't involve money and power, basically. It was much more humble and much more Christ-like in its history. So it seemed to me that in the symbolism and the rituals of secret societies, they were passing down knowledge that was perhaps, I mean, certainly older than the knowledge in Christianity. So, for example, I discovered that there were lots of prior gods on Earth that fulfilled the role of Jesus before Jesus came along. So in terms of virgin birth, you had Horus, the Egyptian gods, Attis, Zoroaster, Dionysus, Krishna. These were all born of a virgin. Mithras was born of a virgin on the 25th of December.
Would you put Zeus in there too, the Greek god?
Yeah. So you've got all these prior characters. And then there's the story of Persephone, who comes down into matter, and it's the idea of the soul that incarnates on the 22nd for 3 days of December. So on the 25th of December, she incarnates into matter, and then she rises back up at Easter, which from that area, there was the idea that you were born into Virgo after 9 months. The constellation of Virgo. So I'd find in these myths, you know, know, and it's certainly in the crucifixions and things like that, that all these major characters that were crucified. Dionysus was crucified, hung from a tree and pierced in the side with a spear. And there's a really interesting story, the idea of Lazarus. So Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead in the town of Bethany. Now, if you go back a few thousand years, you get Horus, the son of God, Ra, raising Osiris from the dead in the town of Bethany. So it's the same story.
Interesting story, huh?
Yeah, so I began to discover that all the key elements in Christianity, in the life of Jesus, all the mystical elements, are actually from previous myths. They're from older stories. And it's not just one here and there where there's a similarity. It's quite clearly there's a source for all of these. And I can see in secret societies like Freemasonry, in the third degree, you go through this death and resurrection ritual. And all of these go back to this idea of death and resurrection. It's kind of the nature ritual that all, you know, plants and everything die in winter and they're resurrected in the spring. So the whole myth goes back to that very pagan idea. Now, the Freemasons are practicing that as a ritual. They don't see it as the crucifixion, the death and resurrection.
Were these societies, Robert, were they powerful in those days?
No, they would have been born out of necessity, really. They would have come from groups that had knowledge.
Okay.
Knowledge from, you know, things like the Egyptian libraries and the Gnostics. And they would have seen that knowledge being destroyed. And they would have seen their temples and the churches being destroyed. And, you know, most of the Christian churches in Europe are built upon pagan temples. They demolished the old temple of Isis and they would build a Christian one. So, and for a time, there was a time when they were tolerated. You know, in the first few hundred years of the Catholic Church, they would install a pagan altar in churches like Notre Dame. That had its own pagan altar. So it had a Christian altar and a pagan altar. But as time went on, that began to get more of it, got absorbed into Christianity, and the iconography and the symbols all get taken over by Christianity. And the old religions and old ideas begin to get pushed out. And I think a lot of what was thought to be the truth by those secret societies and groups, they felt they needed to protect that and pass that on.
Were they dangerous at all, Robert, the societies?
Not then, no. No, they didn't need to be. I think it was a matter of survival and a matter of protecting what they saw to be a religious truth. So at the time, the danger would have come from the Catholic Church, which began the Inquisition, began to burn people for having alternative views. I don't think the danger really lies with the secret societies at that stage. It becomes more prevalent later, I think.
The Knights Templar, now I'll always know of them as the Guardians of the Shroud of Turin. What was their role during that time period?
Well, yeah, the Templars are really interesting because they go to the Holy Land and they spend about 7 or 8 years excavating Temple Mount, where the original Temple of Jerusalem was, Solomon's Temple. And they did basically an archaeological dig. And whatever they recovered is important. It's reenacted. The entire excavation is reenacted in Masonic degrees as if they discovered secrets. But I think that's symbolic that they went to the Holy Land and they actually spoke to Saladin and they spoke to the Arabs and they would have learnt of this alternative material because while it's been suppressed over 1,000 years in Europe, this hadn't happened in the East. So you would have still had the equivalent of the Dead Sea Scrolls or the Nag Hammadi Library, and there were certainly Gnostic Gospels that were known about, the Book of Jubilees, possibly a Gospel of Thomas. So there's a good chance that they found other Gospels, other information that had been excluded from the Bible that gave them a different perspective. So they became heretics. But they were also very rich, and the French king decided that he wanted their wealth. So when they returned from the Holy Land, because the French king kept squandering all the money, he eventually decided to round them up and seize all their goods. So there was an inquisition against the Templars eventually. But they part their knowledge. Their entire fleet disappeared. Their wealth disappeared. Most of the Templars escaped outside of France, many of them.
Are there any Templars today?
Yes, oh yes. Yeah, they meet in London, actually. There's a group that meets in London. There's a kind of worldwide group that's run out of Portugal currently.
Huh.
There's plenty of Templars in America.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Who believes that they're a continuation of the original Knights Templars. And they have libraries and they have archives and material. They're still going in various forms. There's certainly they're a Templar group in Scotland.
What's their mission today?
That is hard to tell. That I'm not sure of entirely, because I think a lot of this got diluted, certainly in the last few hundred years. They moved away from being esoteric and kind of ritualistic and become slightly businesslike. But I think they still have some of the ideals. The problem I have with the Templars and the Freemasons is they were never proactive. They're very good at teaching their people, somebody joined the Freemasons, they would take them through these rituals and teach them stuff, but they never put anything out. They stopped trying to influence society. So as a group, they're not very influential. I think they have degrees and people can work through them and they can learn about themselves and use it as a kind of self-development tool for those that want to get in it for that. I think a lot of the understanding of the symbolisms may have been lost or only belongs to the highest degrees. So it's hard to tell. You rarely meet a very senior member of the Templars or the Freemasons. And when you do, they don't really give a lot away. And I'm not a joiner. I'm not interested in joining groups. I'm interested in what they do and what they are, but I've never been one for joining secret societies.
Robert Howell's our special guest. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We use a phrase these days, Robert, quite often called the Illuminati. Who are they? What are they?
Okay, there are three, historically, there were kind of three versions. So the original Illuminati, I think people would be quite surprised, in 1776, the Illuminati formed in Bavaria amongst academics and Freemasons and members of secret societies. And their aim was actually to free society from corrupt politicians, from kings that were unfit to rule, from religious influence on science and education. They were against all forms of corruption. They were really interested, and they were proactive. Unlike what Freemasonry had done, they were very active in society. They helped fuel the French Revolution because they saw that kings did not serve the public. And they would look at people in terms of, do you serve? You know, does a ruler serve? This is a question your country is having to face right now. Of choosing a leader that will actually serve the country and not their own ends and the ends of their friends. They were really interesting. They were very anti-establishment to some extent. And they would recruit people and they would put them through initiations. And these people would then be told to infiltrate the highest groups of government and business and religion and to start to steer it towards something that was much more kind of advanced. And they had a complete equality, they had complete tolerance, they had male and female members, they believed that women were just as good as men, they saw no difference. And this is a long time ago, this is, you know, the 18th century. So they were very forward-thinking, and they really wanted society to be ruled by meritocracy. You know, it's like if you went for a job today at a hospital, you'd have trouble getting a job. Now we've got, in this country, we've got a politician who's in charge of all our hospitals who wouldn't get a job as a cleaner if he went for a job in a hospital. He's got no history, no background, no education. Most of our politicians have a degree in ancient history or something equally useless, and politics, and that's it. So we end up with leaders and cabinets and senates that are not qualified to have the roles that they have. Any other area of life, if you went for a job and you had no qualifications, you wouldn't get in the door.
No, not at all.
None of them are qualified. So the Illuminati saw this, and they said these people aren't fit to rule. I mean, Europe was under kings and nobles at the time. It was much more run by succession, by people who inherited their power and had absolutely no qualities often to use it. And like the French king would just squander all the money.
See, but today we would call the Illuminati those people who are extremely wealthy, the power brokers of this planet. Is that accurate?
Sadly, it's a kind of What happened was a book came out in the 1970s by Robert Anton Wilson and Robert Shear, called The Illuminatus. And they claimed that the Illuminati were the secret, it was a fiction, book of fiction, and they claimed the Illuminati were the secret rulers of the world. And they find all sorts of evidence for this controlling hidden hand that's running everything. And that kind of got linked, it got conflated with the idea of a new world order. Whereas in reality, the Illuminati were the complete opposite of the new world order. So although, yeah, the modern accepted use of the term is that the Illuminati and the new world order are the same thing. In fact, the Illuminati would have been completely opposed. They would have been the enemy of the new world order. But yes, we do have this idea of a new world order.
And people aren't comfortable with that, Robert. So something's happening where people don't like them, don't want them around. What do you think it is?
Yeah, there's a sense that the people in power aren't working in the interest of the public. I mean, I can give you, do you want an example?
All right, then, yeah, even though you're absolutely right, but yeah, give us an example.
So, for example, in the UK, our government spent £27 billion of taxpayers' money funding the war in Afghanistan. Now, we were there for 15 years. It cost us 453 soldiers. At no point did the news really get into why we were there. The politicians gave this excuse that we're there to stabilize the region, but in wars historically have a tendency to destabilize regions, and this one just causing more problems.
We chased bin Laden out of there, and you know it took years to finally catch him and get him.
Well, it would have helped if we'd have started in the country where it was and not gone and invaded Iraq for the hell of it, for the oil. So I kind of looked into Afghanistan, and I could not understand what we were doing in there, and I couldn't understand why the news. It seemed to me that all this 24-hour news we got, and nobody was really digging into that question of what are we doing in there. So during this time, we spent $27 billion. Our government cut $12 billion from our health service. So they were cutting money from our health service, which keeps people healthy, and spending it on military to go and invade and supposedly stabilize a foreign country that has nothing to do with the UK. It's no threat to our country at all.
Same with us.
And I looked into it, and I discovered that there's a vast natural gas reserve under the Caspian Sea. It's one of the biggest oil reserves in Europe, certainly. And that the oil companies want to run a pipeline to the Persian Gulf, and to do that, they have to go through either Iran or Afghanistan. And so the conspiracy theorists online are looking at that and saying, the reason we're in this war is for gas. It's nothing to do with stabilizing regions. The same way we were in Iraq. There was no weapons of mass destruction. So at which point you have to think, well, who does our army work for? Because it's not protecting our realm. If anything, it's going to create more terrorism. You know, so who is our government working for? Who are our armies working for? And they seem to be working for private industry. They seem to be working for oil companies.
Yes, you're right.
They don't seem to be working in support of the public, and we vote these people into power to be in service of the public. And this is what the Illuminati discovered 300 years ago, that the rulers aren't in service of the public. And then you have to decide what you're going to do about that, which is a problem.
So, well, and the conspiracy theorists, they're right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real surprise. You start to read this thing and think, oh, this is crazy. You know, a lot of conspiracy theory stuff, it is completely out there, but some of it starts to look very close to like it might be true. And then you get things like, you know, Dick Cheney, your defense secretary, gave $8.5 million to Halliburton for rebuilding Iraq and working in Iraq, and a big oil conglomerate.
$8.5 billion.
Politics, he gets the job of CEO.
Hold on for a second, Robert. We're at our commercial break, but we'll come right back with more. Okay, welcome back to Coast, our special guest Robert Hulls as we talk about secret societies. And Robert, we were talking about the Illuminati and these societies and, of course, where we are today with them. The Illuminati, they are power brokers, are they not? Don't they control many things that governments do?
The New World Order, yeah, that people confuse what was a different secret society. But yeah, the New World Order appears to be made up, if you believe in the idea of a New World Order, of old money and businesses and these various groups that were put together after World War II, the kind of the idea that the elite are somehow organized and are steering society towards their aims and through globalization of resources and things like that. And we see these groups, the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergs, the Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome. These are real organizations, and private members club, Bohemian Grove. And these have some of the wealthiest people in the world, including presidents and leading politicians, meeting in secret to discuss the future of the world. And to outsiders, it looks like Spectre from the James Bond films. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Like, they look really suspicious. Really. So people assume that they are up to no good. And then in the way that the world is going with these endless wars and the amount of money that's being poured into the military and those kind of industries, it does look like they have some control.
What do they want?
If you follow the logic or the pattern of the way the world's going, you're looking towards kind of creating society that's almost in slavery, a kind of globalization of the world's resources, the enslavement and exploitation of people for the benefit of the elite. So that kind of mass cheap manufacturing, where people are, there's something like 27 million slaves in the world today, which is more than at any other time in history.
Jeez.
And there are entire countries like Indonesia where they're all farmers originally, and they've all been kind of migrated into these factories to produce cheap goods, cheap products, and consumerism. It's all consumerism. So I think there's that idea that there is this globalization of resources going on, that the World Bank is monopolizing the money, that the oil industry is monopolizing the fuel, and that the power is growing for these people. And you do have that 1% that people rally against, which is there is clearly such a big gap between the wealthiest people in the world and the rest. And I think whether or not you believe in a New World Order, I think these people come together when it suits them for their own ends. I'm not so sure there's some overarching conspiracy theory where they are running the world. I don't think that they're organized, but I do think that people with power can meet in secret currently and decide things that have a lasting impact on the public. And to some extent, the politicians we have don't really have the power to address that, it seems. You know, I was talking about the Afghanistan war, we had both governments, the left-wing and right-wing government in this country in power, both funded the Afghanistan war. Neither of them stood up to it or stopped it. And neither of them could justify why we were spending all the money that needed to go into healthcare and social care and into the people. You know, the reaction towards things like terrorism, 53 people died in Paris, in France, in a terrorist act. And our Prime Minister jumped up on TV and said, no amount of money will be saved. You know, we'll spend any amount of money to fight terrorists. That wasn't even in our country. Now, 20,000 people in the UK die every year because they can't afford central heating. They die of hypothermia. And our government does nothing about that. And there's 20,000 of our own people. So they seem to be steering taxpayers' money into the military and into war instead of spending it on building up their own country.
They don't care about people, do they?
Well, no, but people shouldn't be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people. And that's what people need to realize. That's where the groups like the original Illuminati came in, because they empowered people. And you see that today in online communities. You know, I got tired of watching war on the news, where you would see the war in Iraq and it looked like a firework display. It was all filmed from a distance. It was all, the camera was miles away from what was going on. You never saw the real impact, the schools, the hospitals, the children that were killed. You only ever saw, oh, look at all the big flashy lights. Now, that was mainstream news, but if you go online, if you listen to radio shows like yours, if you start to look around at alternative news stories, you start to discover that actually some of this stuff is really having a bad impact and is doing a lot of damage. And that's going to create a lot of hatred for the West and a lot of anti-West sentiment, because we're killing people's children and they don't know why we're there. Well, they know why we're there. They think we're there for the oil, and we probably are. And that's pretty shocking.
Yeah, it is. And the fact that this sad collateral damage is there as we try to pillage having this effect, I think, this hatred toward our countries.
We go in and we bomb the infrastructure, which is the water supply and things like that. How does that win you a war, depriving the citizens of clean water? They start to die of disease.
You know, and they end up hating your guts.
Yeah, absolutely. And rightly so. You kind of say, we didn't vote these politicians in to do this, did we? We didn't ask them to keep going to war on our behalf. There's no battles that we need to be fighting anymore. There's no threat. There's no direct threat from any country to the US or to the UK.
We haven't been
invaded for 1,000 years over here. We're really kind of...
Well, Robert, do these New World Order folks, do they have a soul?
It's kind of a crime of collusion where it's all about maintaining money and maintaining power. I actually consider them the old world order because they're clearly made up of the aristocracy and the old money, old European money. You know, it really damages a kind of view of politics. It devalues politics completely. But the problem you've got coming up next month in the US is you can vote for the rich, white, upper middle class, geriatric right-wing politician, or the rich, white, upper middle class, geriatric right-wing politician. At no point should the word democracy be used in that. They're both your candidates are identical. They're just on a different grade of each other. Equally frightening to the rest of the world, I have to say.
Well, I think that has been happening since the beginning of time, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. There was an idea around at the creation of America, modern America, that if you're going to create a country, you create the ruling party and you create the opposition. And then you never lose power because people believe that they've got democracy when they actually haven't got a choice. They choose either your politician or your other politician. And there is an interesting book, and this is where Freemasonry starts to get problematic. In the 1920s, a book came out, a Masonic publication called The Men's House. You can still find it today. And it has a passage in it which says one of the presidential candidates, we believe the public went against them when it was discovered that they were a Freemason. However, the other presidential candidate was also a Freemason. And you read that and think, well, how is this a democracy? Those two people are in the same lodge, they're in the same organization, they meet in secret, they decide, they make their choices. We don't know if they're making their choices based on what the public needs are or what's happening in those secret meetings. So yeah, if both your candidates are Freemasons, if both your candidates are basically identical, you don't have a democracy anymore.
What are the Freemasons anyway? What do they do?
What did they do?
I mean, I've had some calls from some people who are Freemasons, and, you know, they put together benefits and hospitals and stuff.
Oh, yeah, I mean, a lot of the lower degree. The interesting thing about Freemasons is, of course, the people that join it, I mean, generally join the first 3 degrees. There are 33 degrees. And to some extent, you learn in secret societies, you'll do a ritual, say, an initiation, and you'll be told what it means. But when you get further up, or higher up through the organization, you'll get another layer of interpretation, and then another layer, and then another. So until you get to the top, how do you really know what you've joined? How do you really know what you're in service of? So it's quite difficult. And there is problems within Freemasonry around you're not allowed to basically drop another Freemason in it. You're not allowed to get another Freemason into trouble. And there's been cases in the UK where a court judge has sent somebody down for murder, and then that person has said that they're a Freemason, and that one of the judges actually said, I wish I'd have known that before I sentenced him, as if to say that would have affected the sentencing.
Then you have people like whistleblowers, some in jail, some on the lam, like Edward Snowden, hiding in Russia.
Well, this is what's happened, is the new counterculture, the new real Illuminati, the people that are carrying on the Illuminati's tradition of subversion, of attacking these kind of corrupt politicians, has gone online. So the online communities are starting to become empowered. And this is a way forward, because the internet is still outside of government control. They're obviously tracking everything everybody does.
Oh, sure, of course.
Snowden proved on countless occasions. But what this means is there is an outlet. What WikiLeaks created was an outlet for whistleblowers. We've always had whistleblowers. You had the one in Philip Morris, the tobacco industry, where the guy quite high up said actually stuff is linked to GANs. You know, you had Karen Silkwood in the nuclear industry, right back to the police in the 70s, police corruption. So we've had people speak out, but now the internet would allow them to do it anonymously. So you had WikiLeaks being able to release this information as wide as possible to the public and to try and protect the names of the people who released it. Now, someone like Snowden, it was so clearly identified the person who had his job, because he knew so much and he had such high security that he had no choice, because there was no way they wouldn't have known it was him. So he had no choice to run.
He had to go.
I mean, this is a person who stood up to what he saw as illegal, which was there were crimes being committed. You know, when your head of security goes beyond in front of Congress and blatantly lies and says we're not tapping phones, whilst cutting through the internet cable so they could monitor it constantly, the undersea cable. You know, and Snowden looking at the stuff they were hoovering up and thinking, this isn't right. This is not, I've got to do something about this. The guy's a national hero, you know, and yet the press has been really weird. They've been kind of, on the one hand, vilifying him and saying he shouldn't have done this.
And there are some people that actually think, Robert, that he's a traitor.
I know. Well, he's being portrayed as a traitor. The man is an absolute patriot.
I think any time somebody comes forward and points out illegalities, especially of the scope and magnitude that Snowden pointed out, he is a hero.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and one of their excuses is, well, he should have gone through the correct channels.
Maybe he tried.
But a few years previous to him doing this, somebody else did go through correct channels, and they got fired. And then someone else who supported them within the organization found themselves in prison.
And he probably saw that.
Yeah, and you think you cannot go through direct channels because you will lose your job, they will close your bank account, and they will find some excuse to put you in prison.
Yeah.
Currently, for example, he's being charged with treason. Now, there's nothing, spying.
Did you notice that not one of our two major presidential candidates talked about Edward Snowden? As far as I'm concerned, they haven't talked about him. I haven't heard
anything. Why aren't the press asking them about it?
Yeah, that should have been a great question at one of the debates.
Yeah, why
you know, if you're elected president, what will you do with Edward Snowden? Will you allow him back into the country, drop all the charges? What would you do? I'd love to hear their response.
I think Hillary once said that that he ought to be killed at some point. But there is an issue, because one of the charges leveled against him carries a death penalty, even though it's something he's not guilty of.
Oh, my God.
Espionage, I think it is. He's had one of the many charges that they've heaped on him. One of them is the idea that he would take these secrets and sell them to a foreign country.
I don't think he did.
To undermine the security of the U.S., which he never intended to do and hasn't done.
It's unfortunate that he ended up in Russia, though, I guess.
It is. It is. But there are very few places that could stand up to the U.S. So that is the problem. As Julian Assange, you know, the co-creator of WikiLeaks.
I know. They've nipped his internet service, Robert.
Yes, I know. That's oppressing him during the... So there's obviously pressure on Ecuador from the U.S. government to suppress his internet access during the
elections. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think right after the election, his internet will go back up again.
He's not even in your country. Not only do you supposedly have freedom of speech, but since when are you allowed to suppress the freedom of speech of people in other countries who are not criminals? He's not been charged. He was never charged. He's not under any criminality.
What are people saying worldwide about the world right now?
I think, like me, one of the reasons I got very interested in, because I was never that, I kind of kept an eye on politics. I think, like me, one of the reasons I really started to dig in to try and find out what was going on is because we're getting this sense of disassociation. We don't really understand why governments are acting the way they are, or why the world seems to be getting worse and not better. And we're going and committing these wars that don't seem to fix anything and just cost obscene amounts of money. You know, they just pushed countries further and further into national debt.
Yeah. Do you think Tony Blair got duped by George Bush, who I think got duped?
I don't think he was duped. I think Bush must have had something over him, and I don't know if it was trade agreements or what, but there was this sense that nobody could be that stupid. He had to be acting against his own self-interest. He was being pulled into something, and there must have been some deal in the background, and whether it was part of the rights to the oil, the spoils, the share of the spoils, it was either for wealth and greed, or they had something on him politically that they could blackmail him into doing it, because no rational person would have dragged us into that war. It was an absolute folly.
Well, and everybody fell for it, and they all went along with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's weird. See, that's what feeds into people's idea that there is a new world order. When the press don't stand up every day and say, there are no WMDs. We know there are no WMDs. Why are you still doing this? If we find that there are no WMDs, are you going to resign? Because if a politician stands and says, I make this promise, or this exists, the response of the press should pretty much always be, and if there isn't, will you resign? And if they say yes, you hold them to it. And it's the same with politicians going into government. If they make promises, you should have a list of those promises and say, right, what are you promising?
Well, the English form of government seems to go along with, if something happens, they just resign. You don't wait until another election, for example. Here, basically, other than impeachment proceedings, we're stuck with them for 4 years.
I know. We have cabinets that can be shuffled around and people can move in and out of roles. You seem to have people that are permanently in roles, regardless of the government. That seems really odd.
Well, it really does. Hey, Robert, tell us where we can get your books.
It'll be on Amazon. If you go to my website, I've got links to, there's a lovely link for local bookshops in the U.S.
Great.
Where you can find it in your local bookshop or order it through your local bookshop. If you can support a local bookshop, please do. Go onto the site, but look up, local bookshops in your area, order it. It's available through a distributor in the U.S., so it'll be widely available.
Robert, when we come back, I want to talk with you about where are we headed. What's the future hold, in your opinion, for all of us? And then we'll also take an hour of phone calls from listeners who really want to talk with you. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.